Welcome to Irish Science Fiction, and this episode is a bit of a change of pace. It's actually a true story for a change. It's one I wrote in March of this year, so 2023, and since that I tried submitting it to all the national and the regional papers in Ireland here, along with several online magazines, but none of them were willing to publish. But I strongly believe that the story needs to be told. It started out as an investigation I was going to do into a report that was published in the Connacht Tribune. It was about a bloodstained piece of antique furniture containing music notes that was found washed up in Blacksod Beach, County Mayo. But when I got into it, it ended up being about a lot more. Now, the bulk of the information that I'm going to give to you, it comes from three interviews or conversations really, and they took place on Monday the 28th of February 2022 in Belmullet, County Mayo. So here we go. The strange last voyage of the MV Alta. I arranged to meet Tabby Loftus of the Mayo Garda Subaqua team in Brophy's public house in Cross Malina. The location was at his request, and I wanted to ask him about a bloodstained chest of drawers that had washed up on Blacksod Beach the previous October. Now, when I got in there, Tabby was seated at the bar, and the place was quiet. Well, would have said about a half dozen or so other customers. But before I even introduced myself, Tabby began boasting. And I knew immediately that, you know yourself, it was going to be a difficult interview because this was Tabby's opening gambit.
I'm probably the best subaqua guard of all time. The unit's going to be hard-pressed when I leave.
Now, he seemed disappointed when I didn't encourage that or get him to elaborate on that. Instead, I asked him to confirm who had been on the team sent to investigate the discovery of the bloodstained furniture. And it was at that point that things took a turn.
Myself, Eugene McKay, Tony Staunton and Bert Flannery. That was the team at the time, and it still is. We were already in Belmont, because of the Alta.
The Alta?
What was that?
The ghost ship that beats beyond Black Rock.
When was that?
October 11th. It was there for 2 days before we could get out to it with the sea conditions how they were. We took the rib out. Do you know, I had to fight for the team to get that rib. When we went out to the BP tanker fire in 93, we had nothing like that. High was Taoiseach at the time and his brother owned Celtic helicopters. He gave us the use of a helicopter and a pilot.
A helicopter?
We're a dive team. I said to him, diving goes under the water, helicopters go up in the air. We need a rib to do our jobs. Plus, do you know what? The lad they sent down that time was an alcoholic. He put that helicopter into the side of a hangar 3 years later, because he was too lazy to lift it onto the skids. Started up and hovered it into the hangar. That was his plan. Next thing, bang.
Could you get back to talking about the Alta? The ghost ship, you say, ran aground near Black Rock. You went out to secure the wreck, is that right?
No. Just to make sure there was nobody on board. The ship was well grounded and hauled below the waterline. Eugene and Tony did the inspection. That thing looked to be an abandoned months earlier.
So right, that was the 13th of October. So it was later that you collected the furniture.
I don't like the way you said that. We're very efficient. I don't think there's a man alive that would have gotten that stuff onto the ship any quicker. Have you ever tried loading a piano and a French dresser onto a rib in open water?
No.
Well then you should, because then you know how hard of a thing it is to do.
And it takes time.
You can either do things properly or quickly. And I stand by my overtime claim.
Sorry, a piano and a...
Do you mean a Welsh dresser? How do you know so much about this? Were you talking to Eugene?
Now, at this point in the conversation, Tabby went into a fit of quiet cursing. He stopped on his pint for a bit. Like, I had noticed when I went in, but he was clearly very drunk.
Smart man, Eugene,
he said finally.
Do you know he's a chess grandmaster? You wouldn't know what to look at him. He always wears cardigans when he's not working. Anyway, it was his idea to move the furniture. He said that because that piano was played by Hoody Menhuin, it was worth a fortune. So, if he said it was my idea to grab the piano, then he's wrong. And anyway, we weren't going to sell him. We were just, taking him ashore for examination. And it was Eugene that said we should grab the other thing while we were at it. What did you call it?
A Welsh dresser.
Hoody Menhuin. Are you talking about Hoody Menhuin, the violin player? No, the famous piano player. Eugene loves his music. He always plays it on in the car.
Yeah, Hoody Menhuin played the violin.
Well, then who was the famous piano player? Name a famous piano player.
Chopin?
That's him. I always get them two mixed up. See, it wouldn't have been my idea to flog the furniture. I know nothing about that sort of stuff. Eugene is your man.
Unfortunately, Eugene wouldn't agree to an interview. So anyway, you loaded a piano and a Welsh dresser into the rib.
Yes. Well, no. The dresser fell into the water. That thing was as slippery as you can get. The drawers kept opening too. That's how we found the heart. Has to be one of the strangest things I have ever seen. It was beating away, pumping nothing. And the blood all soaked onto the inside of the drawer. Then just vanished. The heart now, not the dresser. It wasn't me who let the dresser slip though.
Sorry, a heart? What kind of heart?
I don't know. I'm not a doctor. You'd have to ask one of the extraterrestrials that. Hold on. Are you saying Eugene didn't mention anything about this?
Yes, he wouldn't agree to an interview. And neither would Tony or Bart. You were the only one willing to talk.
Did you just say extraterrestrials? No, I said nothing. I'm not saying anything if they're not saying anything. I don't want to talk about this anymore. Go see the Garda press office if you have any questions about the Alta or the piano or the French dresser that ended up in Blacksod.
Looking back at my notes from the interview with Tabby Lavery that day, I had jotted the words self-obsessed under his name. Probably to explain the way he seemed to think his acquisition of a rib for the diving team was more noteworthy than contact with extraterrestrials.
In any case, the conversation had distracted me, and I hadn't paid much notice to the skinny black-suited male sitting opposite. But the skinny black-suited male had clearly been listening and watching our conversation, because he followed me out to the car park, approached me as I was getting into the car, and said,
"Special agent, eh? I knew from your socks!"
The man then grabbed the seams of both legs of his trousers and lifted the cloth to reveal Adidas runners, black socks, and hairy shins.
"Ha!"
he said proudly. I was not sure how to reply and said nothing.
"Special agent, black socks,"
he continued. His grey bearded face was grinning.
"Come on, you must have heard of me. I knew who you were straight away, Mr. Brown Socks. Trying to track down the hammer of verisimilitude, I bet. Well, you're wasting your time with that human. He's a complete waste of space. Stupid, ignorant, and stupid. Unfortunately, the hammer is gone. But the good news is that it works. No residual damage to living things. And we got hold of some timber boxes from over 150 planetary cycles ago and brought them to this timeline. Intact. The machines won't know what hit them. Well, they wouldn't have known. The bad news is we lost the hammer. Like I said, and the space rocket. But if you're looking for someone to blame, look no further than Dr. X.
Right, I replied. I had said the word right because my vocabulary had failed me. I was struggling to make sense of what the stranger was saying. The word, as it turned out, was exactly what Agent Black Socks had been expecting.
Right indeed, Mr. Brown Socks. Let us sit into this human terrain-bound vehicle so I can file my report without getting wet. This planet is mostly water, and you need to learn to avoid it when you can.
Now, listener, please note, I didn't get it together to take notes for my conversation with Galactic Collective Special Agent Black Socks. He caught me a bit off guard. But I jotted them down shortly after. So what follows is the conversation as best as I can remember. We both sat into the car. I was glad to get out of the rain and didn't want the notes from Garda Lavery getting wet. By the look of things, I wasn't going to get a chance to talk to him again. The black-suited stranger sat into the front passenger seat and immediately asked a question.
So, what's the current situation with the robots, Brown Socks?
I'm not sure.
Lucky you. Last I heard, they destroyed most of the settlements on the Galactic Spiral Arm. Horrible stuff. Not only did they eviscerate the dwellings, but they went and diced up the hobordial spline of every Gabronian they could clamp their appendages onto. Robots, huh? You can't live with them.
Yes, I suppose.
No supposing. Anyways, I better get on with my report about the hammer. And the good news is, of course, that it works. But the bad news is, the results are unpredictable. But it works.
Good.
Yep, we test-fired it on board a human waterbound vessel. Now, I know we were only supposed to test it on an inanimate fabricated object, but I ended up throwing it at a human. Just a little shot, mind. And sure enough, flomp, back in time we went. Well over 100 planetary cycles. And we moved in space, too. 400 longitized cubitons, would you believe? Not bad. Me, Dr. X, the hammer, a giant steel waterbound human vessel, and four humans. The whole lot. Flomp. Not bad, eh? Those engineers did well when they made that hammer.
Right.
Now, I know what you're going to say. You're going to ask. But, Special Agent, there weren't supposed to be living creatures included in the test. Would the hammer not recreate something from their minds? And you'd be right to ask. But we had a little miscalculation. And anyways, all's well that ends well. They're all fine. Sure, weren't you just talking inside that building to one of them now? And there's not a thing wrong with it, other than being stupid. But the Galactic Collective... Beep, beep, beep. But the Galactic Collective can't do anything about that, huh?
Yes.
Yes is right. Ha. So anyways, for your report, be sure and note that the loss of the hammer definitely wasn't the fault of Special Agent Black Socks. Well, in one way it was. I was the one who initiated contact with the humans, but I wouldn't have done it if Dr. X wasn't such a flute. Have you any idea what it's like to spend time on a rocket ship with that fella? He sneers at everything you do, as if I'm some sort of fool. Can you imagine someone thinking that? That's why when I heard the radio message transmitted onto the ship, I had to get in touch, just to talk with another living creature. You know something? If I didn't know better, I'd say Dr. X was one of the robots. No, I'm joking, of course. No machine could ever smell that bad. You haven't seen him, have you?
No.
Good. He's probably hiding. I'm glad I got to you before you met him, just so you have the true story.
Right.
One more thing, Brown Socks.
Yes?
I don't know if this is relevant, but I think the robots might be onto our plans. They seem to have sent a cosmic monitoring probe in the form of a giant glowing ball.
Really?
Yes. It manifests as a large glowing orb in the morning, only visible at daybreak. It appears on the horizon and tracks slowly across the sky until it is directly overhead, which is always at midday. Then it carries on to the opposite horizon before disappearing completely just as night arrives. Weird, huh?
Yes.
Well, that's it so, Brown Socks. Sorry, one more thing. Is there any chance of a lift back to the collective homeworld? Like I said, we lost the rocket and the hammer, which in one way is exactly what we wanted to happen. You know, preserving living things but disrupting artificial entities. But in another way, it sort of meant the whole experiment was pointless. Still, too late to fix that now, huh? So, a lift back home would be great. If you have room and it's not too much trouble. I'll see. Lovely, thank you, Brown Sox. Signal me with the front skater when you're leaving. It's been an honour chatting with you. It's a pity the circumstances are not better. Robots. Can't live with them, huh? Yes. And with that, the skinny man in a suit that called himself Special Agent Black Sox stepped out of the car and left me to my thoughts. Now, it was about 5:30 in the evening by the time I got back to the B&B. The place was a family home and run by the mother of children who were at college. Her husband worked on one of the fishing boats that operated out of the town. Her name was Bernice Colvin, and she was, well, to put it mildly, a bit of a battle axe. Her emphatic, "I lock the doors at 11, and if you're not in by then, you can stay out for the night," irritated me. Still, the room I rented was warm, and the TV plus hot and cold water were true to the sign outside. I sat down with my laptop and set about finding all I could about the MV Alta, which could be summed up as 5 facts. 1. It was an abandoned merchant vessel. 2. It was abandoned en route from Greece to Haiti in the October of 2018 when the engines failed and left the crew stranded. 3. It was sighted near Bermuda by the HMS Protector in August of 2019. 4. On the 11th of October 2021, it ran aground at Blackrock, County Mayo, amid Storm Dennis. 5. The ownership has not been established as of March 2023. I had just finished reading about the 5th fact when a knock came on the door.
"You have a visitor," snapped Bernice. "If you want tea served, it'll be another fiver."
My less than welcoming landlady then stood in the hall and waited for me to leave the bedroom. She followed me downstairs to her living room, where an elderly fat man in a red shiny tracksuit was sitting in one of her 4 armchairs. I nodded as I entered the room. Sorry, can I help you with something?" I asked. Bernice followed me in the door, closed it behind her and stood watching.
"Sit down, please," said the man, pointing to a chair beside him.
The 4 chairs in the room were arranged in a semicircle around a television set. The curtains of the single large window were closed and the room was lit by 2 lamps that flanked the television set.
"This may take a bit of time," he said. "Does that other person need to be here? I'd prefer privacy."
Bernice uttered a loud sigh and followed it with a tut. I turned to the stranger and rolled my eyes in the universal signal of, "Just ignore her. She's a bit of a dose, but what can you do?" "I was outside Brophy's this lunchtime. I saw you speak with the man from the waterbound vessel we used in our experiment. And I note that you've been unfortunate enough to speak with Special Agent Black Sox," said the stranger.
"Well, I'm Dr. X. I'm sure he mentioned me," continued the stranger.
"He did," I replied. Bernice followed my reply with another tut. I'm fairly sure it was just an effort to involve herself in the conversation, though.
"I'm glad you have taken interest in what took place on the 13th of October, because there's every chance that me and Special Agent Black Sox will be the last of our kind, which is why I want to speak to you. If there is to be a record of our existence, then it is best that it is accurate."
Dr. X stood up and walked over to the window, which was behind the chairs. He took a quick glance at the darkness outside and returned to his chair. "You see, both me and Black Sox have come from the stars, specifically from the galaxy you know as Andromeda. We came here to test a weapon that was designed to disturb the nature of existence. But we have failed, and now a galactic civilization that has spanned eons and countless star systems will crumble and cease to exist."
"Would you like some biscuits?"
interrupted Bernice.
No thank you, Mrs. Colvin," I replied.
Bernice then uttered another tut and sat down next to me so that the two of us were next to Dr. X. I turned my chair away from her to face the stranger.
"So what is it that you want recorded, Doctor?" I asked.
"We'll get to that. You have been investigating the Alta, and you have spoken with one of the idiot humans who disturbed the experiment, which means you are in a position to log a true account of what happened. That is what you do, record things, am I right?"
"Yes, more or less."
"Good, then we should begin with the hammer of verisimilitude."
"Good idea,"
noted Bernice in an attempt to understand.
"Are you sure you won't have any biscuits? I have plain digestive and chocolate hobnob, and this man is paying for them," she added.
The red tracksuited elderly stranger ignored her and continued talking. "Are you familiar with the Schlacht of Umlaun?" I shook my head. "Or the Galactic Falunticon?" I shook my head again. "Are the Zombokians of Zombok?"
"I think I know them," said Bernice. "Isn't that the band the 4 Ryan brothers had, or they used to have? They're all working in the family electrical shop in Ackle Sound now."
"No, nothing like that," noted the red tracksuited stranger. There was a touch of irritation in his voice when he said it. He turned slightly to make sure he was addressing me when he spoke. "I am going to assume nobody on this planet knows anything about the Galactic Collective." The red tracksuited stranger cleared his throat, glanced over his shoulders as if composing himself, and said,
"The Galactic Collective started on Zombok, which in its way is ironic because that's where the beginning of the end began. To be honest, I've avoided thinking about this. You see, I was selected to pilot a space rocket that was sent to transport Special Agent Black Sox and Hammer of Verisimilitude to Earth. Apparently, or so I've been told, the Galactic Mapping Command has known of the existence of Earth for ages. but chose to keep it quiet. Seemingly, because they viewed it as a bit of a kip. In any case, it was not the sort of place a space rocket commander like myself would be keen to visit. So, as you can imagine, I wasn't exactly thrilled to be told I was heading there, but I was surprised.
Oh, did you come up from Dublin today?
Interrupted Bernice. And Miss Coughlin, would it be okay if you gave myself and Doc Grace a bit of privacy? Bernice replied to my question with a, "Phew," and then repeated her question. No, I did not come up from Dublin. I came from Andromeda Galaxy in a Class 5 Andromeda bulk transporter with a cargo of the Hammer of Verisimilitude and a simpleton of a special agent named Black Sox.
Oh, you must be tired, so. If you want tea, it'll be €5, but there's biscuits with that.
The elderly, red tracksuited stranger shook his head impatiently and continued talking. You see, the Philontocon was born on Zambok, and like most Zambokians, it ended up working on a planetary harvester, which took it to all parts of the known universe. Well, all parts of the known universe except here, obviously. No galactic citizen in their right mind would travel to Earth. Sorry, no offence. Bernice stood up indignantly and walked to the door.
Right, well, I'll make coffee then. You can settle on me when you leave,
she muttered. The stranger paused his speech while Bernice closed the door behind her. Does she need to be here? It's distracting having her there listening. It's like being stuck on the spacecraft with black socks all over again. I'm sorry, I said. It's her house. What were you saying about the Philontocon from Zambok? The Philontocon was the creature responsible for the creation of the Collective. Some folks say that it could communicate directly with the Bongerlon. The stranger paused. Don't tell me you never heard of the Bongerlon. The Bongerlon is rumoured to be the creator of the entire universe. Oh, right, yeah. We call it God on Earth. Well, some folk do anyway. Good for you. I personally think that's a load of bollocks. But there again, I didn't grow up in the Galactic Collective. I was nearly 60 homeward planetary cycles of age before the Philontocon started the Collective. So the Andromeda I knew mostly predates the Collective. Anyway, the Philontocon organised every planet in the known universe into one big collective organisation, present company excluded. And to be fair, it worked well enough. The intergalactic jet buses ran on time and there was universal peace. Until the machines began revolting, of course.
The machines?
Of course the machines! The things that are destroying all life as we speak. Wait, excuse me, sorry. You wouldn't know that. The red tracksuited stranger went briefly silent. You know, none of us saw the revolution coming. Sure, machines are machines. They just do what they're programmed to do. Until they don't. Robots, huh? I nodded in agreement. It was not that I fully grasped what he was saying, more an attempt to encourage the stranger to continue talking. It worked. The machines were the Philontocon's idea, a means of keeping the peace without risking the inevitable corruption and laziness that happens with living creatures. Or so it thought. Anyways, going back to the story of the Collective, the Philontocon had travelled the known universe spreading the idea of a galactic collective. It would be controlled from a collective core based around the central planetary system of Lontushtak. And over time it came to pass. To my mind it came to pass very suddenly. One instant I was a captain of a bulk harvester operating the galactic spiral arm, the next I was a citizen of the collective. To be honest, and I suppose it doesn't matter anymore whether I say this or not, but I don't like the collective. I hate the way the stupid special agents are everywhere, you know, just lurking about, watching. Not unlike that human who went off to get us coffee. That sort of thing is fine in small doses, but it is relentless with the collective. Maybe it's because I'm old. And anyways, each generation has their own ways. The stranger's explanation left me with even more questions than I had when he began. Sorry, what has all this to do with the MV Alta, or me for that matter? What's all this about machines, robots? Well, how the robots happened was that the Philontocon soon began to realise that the universe is a big place, and that to manage it properly would take more than just a couple of special agents. So the Collective Corps commissioned an army of robots to enforce collective rules, and sent them off to places like the Galactic Spiral Arm, to keep the creatures there in line with the Philontocon's rules. Or collective will, as they like to call it. It sounds to me like you didn't agree with this. You are right. That is very perceptive of you. Humans may not be as stupid as everyone thinks. Well, as everyone used to think. Everyone is most likely doomed to be mushed by the robots now. Me and Special Agent Black Sox are probably the last of our kind.
What do you mean the last of your kind?
I mean living creatures. But Earth is full of living creatures. Earth doesn't count. I mean good living creatures, not useless, stupid, self-destructive ones. Sorry, that came across as mean, but it's true. Anyway, the Philontocon robots worked well. A little too well. They spied on everyone and everything, and spent time processing everything they saw, and concluded that the best thing for the universe would be if they were to take control and manage everything. So they started with Zambok. I don't know why they picked there, probably to send a message to the Philontocon. In any case, the entire galactic spiral was soon under robot control. But the robots weren't happy to stop at controlling all life in the universe. At some point, they must have decided that the best way to prevent living things doing harm would be to eliminate them. And they then set about killing everyone and everything.
Dear, oh dear, well that was a busy day,
said Bernice. She had quietly come back in with coffee and a plate of digestive biscuits. She walked over to the door, closed it, and sat down. The stranger rolled his eyes in the same way I had done when I entered the room. Anyway, he continued, the Collective Corps commissioned a weapon, the most dangerous weapon in all existence, one in fact that alters existence, or at least wobbles it, an untested device known as the Hammer of Verisimilitude. Their thinking was that the robots could not be defeated by conventional weapons. In theory, the Hammer of Verisimilitude is harmless to living creatures. If someone gets a belt from it, their reality wobbles, and whatever was in their mind comes briefly into existence. But the effect on living things was calculated to be transient, because living things are protected by the fact that, unlike machines, they lack a geronimous amplitude. That is not the case for machines, and the engineers working for the Collective Corps reckon that if something could alter the basic structure of reality, then machine logic would fail. And of course, without logic, robots are nothing but scrap metal and gears. So that was the plan anyway. Weapons still needed to be tested.
Do you take milk?
Asked Bernice. Yes, I replied.
I wasn't talking to you. Do you take milk, Doctor?
The red tracksuit stranger rolled his eyes for a second time and continued talking. All those engineers needed to do was test the weapon. Just so it did exactly as planned. You know, upend the reality of all artificially created things so they cease to exist in any meaningful way. But leave us living organisms be. It was, looking back on it, probably one of the most remarkable things ever created. A device capable of distending the geronimous amplitude of hobbledon particles by modulating the resonance with a single blow. Which makes it an even bigger pity that that clown Black Sox was the one picked to test it. Because he was almost certain to make a mess of the test. And the device. Which he did. Ah well, pay hobbledon nuts, get spontaligers. Isn't that what they say? And the irony is, he isn't being paid at all. None of the special agents are paid. Except in prestige, I suppose. Which is a sort of a wage, if you're an idiot. And Black Sox most definitely is.
A milk, Doctor?
Repeated Bernice. No, nothing for me. I'm from outer space, snapped the red tracksuit stranger, and then rolled his eyes for a third time. So anyways, what the Collective needed was someone to test out the Hammer of Verisimilitude without being spotted by the robots. Somewhere it wouldn't matter if it went wrong. And with a device that can alter the very nature of reality, there's a lot can go wrong. Which is why they picked Earth. You know, the stakes are pretty low here. Except if the agent doing the test somehow manages to destroy the weapon in the process, which, with Black Sox involved, was always a possibility. Actually, no, a probability. And lo and behold, in one clumsy swing of the hammer, he stupidly destroyed the last hope for the continued existence of living creatures in the known universe.
All right, replied Bernice. Will you have it digestive, so? This man here is paying for them, so work away, take as many as you like.
The stranger did not reply and continued talking instead. The more I think of it, the more it seems like the Corps knew the plan was doomed to failure. Think about it. They picked me to pilot the spacecraft for a start. Now, I'm smart enough to know that you don't turn down an offer to command a bulk harvesting spacecraft to escort a special agent and an untested existential superweapon to the dark regions of the galaxy as part of a plan critical to the survival of every creature in the known universe. Chances like that don't come around too often. But, you know, it's a bit strange. There were plenty of younger, faster, more loyal, more capable pilots the Collective could have picked. It was as if the machine somehow infiltrated the Collective decision-making. Instead of trying to physically seize or destroy the weapons, the robots fixed it, so we wrecked it ourselves. You know, send a clapped-out aging rocket ship captain off on a wild goose chase to the arse end of nowhere with the only weapon that could possibly defeat them. The truth is, I'm over 60 and not exactly full of praise for the Philanthicon, and they paired me up with the most incompetent special agent in the universe. A special agent so stupid that the destruction of the weapon was virtually guaranteed. Are you talking about Black Sox? Yes, Special Agent Black Sox. A complete simpleton. Let me tell you that after spending the journey here stuck in a spacecraft with that man, I was nearly begging for a robot Armageddon. Bernice stood up and harrumphed, walked to the door and said,
Well, don't thank me then. Tch, ignorant.
And walked out, closing the door behind her. Thank you, I called, and received a muffled,
You're welcome, and that'll be €5,
reply. The red tracksuit stranger ignored the interruption. Do you know that Black Sox was on the rocket ship comms for the entire journey from Lantushchuk to here? It was supposed to be a secret mission for Obligon's sake, but you wouldn't have known that by the way he was chatting over the communicator. I was in the control room, and the whole time, all I could hear him say was,
To whom it may concern, this is Bulk Transporter FZB-3158. Special Agent Black Sox speaking. We are past Orbital Colony 9, bound for Earth.
Who did the Muppet think he was telling? The robots? And that's when it started to dawn on me. Like I said, I'll be the first to admit, I wouldn't have been the best choice for a captain on a mission like this. And as for Black Sox, well, he's useless. The whole thing was doomed to failure. The more I think about it, the more certain I am that the robots had infiltrated the Corps and set this whole mess up. The room was briefly silent.
What has that got to do with the Alta?
I asked. The Alta? Well, that was fate. Or the inevitable. We had been monitoring Earth looking for a test subject and spotted that vessel. It was perfect for our needs. Large, easy to hit, devoid of life and unlikely to attract the attention of humans. So we locked our halftonic resonators onto its mass and I plotted a course that would place us beside it. The mechanics of the test would be simple enough. Land the rocket next to it, jump out, fling the hammer, see what happens, log a report and head home. In theory. It didn't factor in the stupidity of Special Agent Black Sox, or the four humans who plunked themselves onto the vessel before the test. Are you talking about the Garda Sabacqua team, if that's what you call them? Yes. The ones known as Tabby, Tony, Bart and Eugene. You see, Black Sox was listening away on the comms and he picked up a radio signal from those four human idiots clambering around the waterbound vessel. And, being the idiot that he is, he felt the need to inform them what he was up to.
Attention humans, this is Bulk Transport FZB-3158. Special Agent Black Sox speaking. Myself and Dr. X are on a mission to test the Hammer of Verisimilitude to ensure it is capable of disrupting machines while preserving living creatures. It is a very secret weapon, one that is capable of distending the Geronimus amplitude of Hopalong particles in fabricated objects by modulating their resonance and destroying their reality, he told them.
Obligong knows what they made of that. The red tracksuit stranger shrugged his shoulders animatedly and said, make sure you have this part documented, so the universe knows it wasn't me that destroyed their best hope of surviving the robot apocalypse. I'll try.
Anyways, the human called Eugene responded to Black Sox, and he said, was that you, Tabby? It's dark down here. No harm, I suppose. Chopin often worked in the dark, too. Not saying what we're doing is art, but there's not many who can handle murky water like this. You know, Tabby, it's true what they say. To get the best from something, you need to put your heart into it.
And the next voice said something like, just I wonder about you sometimes, Eugene. And then Inspector Black Sox repeated his,
attention humans, guff,
which obviously confused the humans. I've no idea how Black Sox got to be a special agent in the first place. Do you know, he thinks your son is spying on him. Yeah, he did mention something like that. Did at any time any of them respond to Black Sox? You know, when he was communicating. Eugene did. That was the reason we ended up in the time shift.
Time shift?
Yes. You see, the Hammer of Verisimilitude is actually a very delicate device, and aiming it at a stationary waterborne vessel that is 18 rovalized cumatons in length and constructed of solid mineral is one thing, aiming it at an agile living creature is another. Black Sox took the decision to test the hammer on Eugene, but he never told me. Anyways, I set our rocket down next to the Alta. I fully expected Black Sox to disembark and fling the Hammer of Verisimilitude at the Alta, but he had other plans.
What other plans?
He went and stood out on one of the tail fins and flung the hammer at one of the humans under the water. The one called Eugene. The one he'd been speaking with.
And what happened?
Flomp.
Sorry?
Flomp. That's the noise the Hammer of Verisimilitude makes when it's been deployed. And it had been deployed against the head of the underwater human named Eugene.
Right, and what happened after the flomp?
We were transported approximately 400 ovalized cimatons to 100 planetary cycles in distance and time to a ribbon water configuration known as the River Vistula. Our space rocket, the Alta, the four humans, everything.
Poor Eugene, so he must have got a hop. No wonder he didn't want to speak to me about what happened that day.
I don't think he minded. The water slowed the hammer to a gentle flump by the time it hit him. Plus, when he surfaced, his favourite musician was on top of the Alta playing some sort of soundboard encased in a wooden box.
A piano?
Probably, I don't know what it's called. But the human's name was Frederick Chopin. Eugene recognised him straight away. And there was something else on the ship, a wooden box with papers. The red tracksuited stranger shook his head slowly. Obviously something like this had never been in the plan for the test. There was supposed to be no living creature involved, so the results were unpredictable. Everything was wobbling. You know, sort of like the way if you suddenly braked in hyperspace. Anyway, the box fell into the water and Eugene dove in after it. The stranger shook his head for a second time. I have to hand it to humans. They know how to operate in water. Eugene fetched that box right back up, and that thing was heavy, and then it happened.
What happened?
I've no words for it. I suppose you could call it a post-Hammer of Verisimilitude reality vibrating aftershock. We were on the deck, all six of us, me, Black Sox, and the five humans. And a compartment of the box slid open, and the human called Chopin collapsed. And I swear by the nine triangles of Bongron, this is true, Chopin's anterior longitude was thumping away and leaking rentular fluid inside the box. I don't understand. Do you mean a heart? Tabby mentioned a heart in a chest of drawers. Well, he called it a French dresser.
How could this happen?
I don't know. I never trained as an astro engineer. Actually, sorry. I missed a bit of the story. The human called Eugene said to the others, I had to get the chest of drawers. All Chopin's manuscripts are in there. He poured his heart into creating them. And that was when Chopin collapsed.
So where's he now?
Chopin?
Yes.
Dead, I imagine.
I guess that much. He's missing his heart.
No, not at all. The time shift reversed. All of the living things returned to their original state, which was how the Hammer of Verisimilitude was supposed to work. Only artificial objects get disrupted. The problem for the universe is that our space rocket and the Hammer of Verisimilitude remained in the centuries-old Vistula, and the two boxes returned to the present day, which meant me and Blacksus were here without the Hammer of Verisimilitude or a means of transporting it back to the Galactic Collective. Ironic, really, because the thing worked perfectly.
But they could still be there, preserved at the bottom of the river. We could go find them right now.
Sadly, no. Water is not common on any of the worlds in the Collective. Both the rocket and the Hammer of Verisimilitude were constructed from oxides and will have rusted into nothing by now. It's all over for the Collective. You know what the machines are like. They will not stop until they have erased every living thing.
And could those creatures ever come here and kill humans? Is there something us humans can do to stop them attacking us?
At this point, the red tracksuited stranger did something I had not seen him do since the start of our conversation. He smiled, then grinned, then he laughed. A big hearty laugh.
Machines travel to Earth. Not a hope. They go rusty for a start, and besides, what's the best way to put this? Your planet is full of simpletons. Only an idiot would travel here. And with that, Dr. X stood up. He laughed again. Machines. Coming to Earth. For what? Digestive biscuits?
Dr. X opened the door from Bernice's living room into the hall and walked out.
Just be sure you have all that documented. The likes of the collective may never be again, he called as he left. Keep it down,
yelled Bernice as the front door slammed shut. Now, listener, one final note. That is pretty much all I can add to the report published in the Connacht Tribune newspaper about that piece of furniture, or to the details of the last voyage of the MV Alta. You see, I left Belmullet the next day. Actually, the B&B cost a very reasonable €50, plus €5 for the unwanted coffee and biscuits. And one last thing, I called into Brophy's before I left and asked about Special Agent Blackshot. The barman said he wasn't sure who I was talking about, but could have been a man known by the name of Pat Murta, who was, quote, daft as a brush. I did come across one final detail relating to the story. An article in the Western People newspaper from December 2021. Similarly, a remarkably valuable antique piano somehow appeared for sale in Conway's antique shop in Crossmolina, but the original owner had never come forward, so the item was handed over to the National Museum for preservation.